I invite you to turn to Proverbs chapter 5, and I'm going to give you a little bit of time to turn there. And while you're turning there, I just want to kind of get you up to some speed on some things. So yesterday, very early in the morning, I was trying to send my notes out to Debbie, my faithful signer over here, who does an awesome job every week for me. Oh, she's great. So I flipped my computer open, and I'm trying to email her the file, and the file for the sermon was completely gone. And so I was like, well, let's see, tomorrow's Sunday. This is great. So here's the way I'm looking at it. It must have been a really bad first take at this. And so the Lord gave me a chance to do it over again. But here's the other way I'm going to look at it, and this is just a way of saving my feelings. If today is bad, then the first one really was the way it was supposed to go, and, you know, we'd lost the file, and so what do you do, right? So here's the thing. We're in this study on the seven deadly sins. Robert Solomon, who used to teach philosophy at the University of Texas, he once said, you know, I look at the seven deadly sins and I wonder why those are the deadly ones. They hardly even seem to jiggle the scales of justice. And I'm like, well, maybe you need to look harder. If you think about pride, we started with pride because pride is the root of everything else. So you start with the root and you don't worry about necessarily just what's visible all the time, whether it's the stem or the flower. What is it that's giving life to sin? And the answer is it's pride. We have this problem with being completely self-absorbed, self-interested, self-focused. And of course, the place that takes us is not a good place. When you're focused on the self, it hinders you from being able to be focused on other things. Like C.S. Lewis said, you know, when you're so full of pride and you're looking down on others, then you can't see what's above you. If you're looking down, of course, you can't see Jesus. When it comes to lust, we need to understand that this is a problem. There's a reason. Steve Otterburn wrote a book called Every Man's Problem. And here's the thing. It's every man's problem. Now, you can sit there this morning and say it's not mine, but then you're just lying to yourself. Yes, it is. Because when you think of lust, lust manifests itself in a number of ways. We can have an inordinate lust for power. We can have an inordinate lust for money. We can have an inordinate lust for fame. We can have an inordinate lust for a lot of things. We have a lot to unpack over the next several weeks. What I want to focus on today is how lust affects us sexually. And the reason that I want to do that is because the studies aren't good. We have a problem when it comes to sex. In 2015, there was a study by the Journal of Sex Research. It demonstrated that, and I just quote, constant novelty and primacy of sexual stimuli. In other words, we're looking for things to stimulate us sexually. Constant novelty and primacy of sexual stimuli as particularly strong natural rewards make internet pornography a unique activator of the brain's reward system. Here's what it went on to say. Quote, novelty is compelling because it triggers bursts of dopamine in regions of the brain strongly associated with reward and goal-directed behavior. Here's basically what it's trying to say. What it's trying to say is that dopamine, which kind of gives you that high feel, when you're so saturated with pornography, what you once were invested in now doesn't work. And what that means is that you have to go to more and more gratuitous things to get the same high that you once got. Goes on to say, our brains, by the way, react to pornography the same way that an alcoholic will react to seeing a drink advertisement. It's basically setting them up to fail. Researchers believe that pornography's intense stimulation of the brain brings about significant changes to the brain that is virtually identical to a drug addiction. So for people that have to or have had to deal with alcohol addiction, or people that have had to deal with heroin addiction or cocaine addiction, the effects in the brain that pornography produces are virtually the same. Moreover, as hours of reported pornography use increases, the amount of gray matter, you know, when your parents talk about the gray matter in the brain, or like my mom and dad always talked about gray matter in the brain, As hours of reported pornography use increased, the amount of gray matter in the brain actually decreased. Here's another way of saying it. Pornography makes you stupid. That's just another way of saying it. It makes you stupid. Now, that being said, how big of a problem is this? How big of a problem is pornography? Well, I'll give you at least some idea. There were over 13,000 adult movies made last year. And I like the name adult movie. Talk about a way to not say it. You know, it's like when people are talking about abortion and they call it reproductive rights. You know, what we try to do is we try to rename things so that the moral problem attached to it doesn't attach to it anymore. It's a way of kind of alleviating our conscience. If I just rename it, if I rebrand it, then that's not really what I'm dealing with here. It's no different when it comes to pornography. A lot of times we'll call it adult entertainment. Now, we know what it is, and we know the problems that it creates. 13,000 adult movies were made last year. Last year. The porn industry, by the way, studies would indicate makes more than the National Football League, the NBA, and Major League Baseball combined annually. There was one study that I was reading that said that it actually makes more than NBC, CBS, and ABC combined in a year. In addition, they have larger revenues, one study indicated, than top technology companies such as Microsoft, Google, Amazon, eBay, Yahoo, Apple, and Netflix combined. Now, so if somebody wants to say we don't have a problem, I kind of look at this and I go, I don't know, we've got something. If we don't want to call it a problem, let's give it another name that might make us feel better. Here's the thing. It not only affects even people at work. One study that I was reading talked about the dollar effect of pornography. Here's the idea. 37 million employees are actually viewing pornography during the day when they're at work. By the way, you're supposed to be working when you're at work. That's free of charge. When you're at work, you're supposed to be working, right? But you've got about 37 million employees are viewing pornography. At least that's what the Nielsen company indicated. Now, that translates into dollar loss. Because when you're viewing pornography, guess what you're not doing? You're not doing your work. If you're not doing your work, you're not being productive. If you're not being productive, it affects the dollar. How many dollars were lost last year based on the Nielsen company's research? And the answer is just under $17 billion were lost to companies because people, instead of doing their work, are looking at pornography. Pornographers, by the way, are very good at what they do. And by that, I'm talking about the way that they market. And the target market might not be who you think, because the target market for pornographers, by the way, is children. That's who they're going after. The average age that they're primarily marketing is somewhere around 12 years old now, 11 to 12 years old. And the studies indicated that a child that's somewhere around, say, 11 or 12 years old, it only takes about 3 days of viewing pornography before they have an addiction to it because of the way that it impacts their brain. Children 10 years old and younger account for 22% of all online obscene content-related consumption. Did you hear the age? 10 years and slightly older. That's 22% of who's looking at. Children 10 years and older, 10 years old and younger account for 22% of everything that's being viewed pornographically. Covenant Eyes does a lot of research on this. And one of the things they've indicated is the average age of first exposure to pornography is now 10 years old. 10. I was thinking about what I was doing at 10. It wasn't that. Honestly, I was playing baseball and stuff. We live in a different time. We just do. The problems are unique. And by the way, I'll say this. The primary issue for when I think of my generation was we just didn't have the access to it. I have not deluded myself into thinking that if the internet wasn't as prominent then as it is now, that the problem wouldn't have already been happening back then. I'm convinced that it would have. The issue is access. And access is simply off the charts. The average kid, by the way, will have seen, if you just take television, just television for a second, the average kid will have seen over 14,000 depictions of sex on TV before they leave the home. The average kid, 14,000 depictions of sex. Now, the question becomes, so what is the depiction? And I think for those of you that have been paying attention, you already know what the depiction is. It's usually gratuitous. And in fact, it's compromising the integrity of what sex is supposed to be. That being said, let's get away from the kids. Let me make an important point about adults. Right now, there are about 20 million adults that are what are described as sex addicts. 20 million walking around. Cornelius Plantinga, he wrote a work called The Tragedy of Addiction. And one of the things he said was this. He said, addictions begin when we use something we believe will relieve distress. It's kind of an escape, is basically the idea. It gets us away from the stuff of life, and so we go to it. But then eventually the addiction creates its own distress. And finally, addicts spiral down when they try to cure the additional pain with the very thing that caused it. You know what the solution is? More of the same, even though more of the same is basically just heaping problems on top of the problems. By the way, this used to be seen as a man's problem. And by this, I'm talking right now about pornography. It used to be seen as the man's problem. That's not true. Like I said, pornographers are really good at what they do. Not only are they targeting kids, they're targeting women as well. They market their product just very differently to women, such that now one in every three people that are addicted to pornography is now a woman. And that number, by the way, is on the increase. It's not on the decrease. So while we could look at a book that says every man's problem, maybe we could have another book and say, might be every woman's problem too. Now, that being said, when I was pointing out the studies just a little bit ago, part of the danger of all of this is where it starts is usually not where it ends. You know, what it is that gives you enough of a hit is simply not enough later down the road. And so you have to get more of it to get a buzz. And so it's like this vicious cycle. Think of the problem of access. I mentioned that before because I'm trying to be honest here, right? Every second, 28,258 users are watching pornography on the internet. 28,258. Every second, $3,075.64 is being spent on pornography on the internet. Now, by the way, if you think about $3,075, we'll skip the change, right? Let's think of $3,075 per second. Let's think, what else could we be doing with that money? I've got a lot of opportunities here. But that's usually not on the list. Every second, 372 people are typing the word adult into the search engine. Every day, 37 pornographic videos are created just in the United States, just in the U.S. 2.5 billion emails containing pornography are sent or received. 68 million search queries related to pornography, which is at least 25% of the total searches, are generated. And 116,000 queries related to child pornography are also received every day. How does online pornography affect Americans? Well, the studies are in. I'll tell you what it says. 40 million American people regularly visit porn sites. 40 million of us. 35% of all internet downloads are at least related to pornography. 34% of internet users have experienced unwanted exposure to pornographic content through ads, pop-up ads, and misdirected links or emails. By the way, that would include me. Probably includes you. How does it affect families? Here's the thing I want to say. It is very unlikely, if the studies are true, half of the men in this room have a problem with pornography, if the studies are true. And if you don't personally have a problem with pornography, then it's very unlikely that you haven't been impacted either by pornography or something sexually related in your family. The odds are just very low. So when somebody says we don't have a problem with sex, I just want to say that's not what the facts are telling us. The facts are telling us we have a huge problem here. Now, the question then becomes, how does the church respond? And a lot of times what happens in churches is you have pastors, you have youth pastors and that don't talk about it. And one of the reasons you don't talk about it is, well, you don't want the blowback from the people that are sitting out there. By the way, don't send me an email tomorrow. Thank you. Do you want God's voice to be heard or not? Do you want it to be heard or not? You see, here's the thing. I have received emails in the past. I'm not saying for anybody in this room because you're good people and you would do something like that. I have received emails from teaching on the book of Song of Solomon. Last I checked, it was in the Bible. It's there. God seems to be talking about it. I remember one of the emails a person sent me, they said, you know, holy people don't talk about these things. I'm like, God's holier than you. If it's in his book, we're going to talk about it. So see, what happens is in this air of holiness, people actually silence the voice of God, and then the voice of the world ramps up, and you have no voice of God that's left to speak against the voice of the world, pertaining to something that affects us every day. So we're going to talk about it. By the way, that was all free of charge right there. We're going to talk about it. How does it affect families? According to the National Coalition for the Protection of Children and Families, this is a study that goes back to 2010, 47% of families in the United States reported that pornography is a problem in their home. Pornography use increases the marital infidelity rate by 300%. Because, see, if you've already started to compromise there, then you've only taken one more. All it is another step of compromise, but you've already built compromise into the way that you make decisions and the way that you view someone. You see them now as a sex object, even if, so to speak, it starts in kind of a seemingly harmless way. It's never harmless, by the way. 40% of people identified as sex addicts, they lose their spouses. 58% suffer considerable financial losses because, here's why, at least 33% of them are getting fired. 68% of divorce cases involve one party meeting a new paramour, think lover. 68% of divorce cases involve one party meeting a new lover over the internet, while 56% involve one party having an obsessive interest in pornographic websites. Ray Ortland, who I love to death, I think he's an insightful thinker, he said, here's the thing, sex is like fire. If it's in the fireplace, it's going to keep us warm. Outside of the fireplace, it's going to burn the house down. And so he went on to say this. He said, see, this is what Satan does. Satan shows us the bait, he just hides the hook. He shows us the bait and he hides the hook. I want you to see what you think you can get out of this. I don't want you to see the damage that I'm about to do to you. So here's the text. All of that leads into the text today, which is Proverbs chapter 5. Let me read it. It says, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Pay attention. Listen closely to my understanding so that you may maintain discretion and your lips safeguard knowledge. Though the lips of the forbidden woman drip honey and her words are smoother than oil, in the end she's as bitter as wormwood and as sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps head straight for Sheol. She doesn't consider the path of life. She doesn't know that her ways are unstable. So, sons, listen to me, and don't turn away from the words from my mouth. Keep your way far from her. Don't go near the door of her house. Otherwise, you'll give up your vitality to others and your years to someone cruel. Strangers will drain your resources, and your hard-earned pay will end up in a foreigner's house. At the end of your life, you will lament. When your physical body has been consumed, and you will say, how I hated discipline and how my heart despised correction. I didn't obey my teachers or listen closely to my instructors. I'm on the verge of complete ruin before the entire community. Now that so far sounds pretty bad, but there is this turn. And in verse 15, it says, drink water from your own cistern, water flowing from your own well. Should your springs flow in the streets, streams in the public squares? They should be for you alone, and not for you to share with strangers. Let your fountain be blessed and take pleasure in the wife of your youth. Bit of a turn there, right? And so he goes on in verse 20 to say, my son, why would you lose yourself with a forbidden woman or embrace a wayward woman? For a man's ways, they're before the Lord's eyes. Here's another way of saying that. You think that you're alone. You're never alone. Your ways are before the Lord's eyes. He considers all his paths. Now get your pen ready, because I want you to underline a couple of things for those of you that write in your Bible like I do. A wicked man's iniquities, underline it, will trap him. It will trap him. He will become tangled in the ropes of his own sin. He will die because there is, underline it, no discipline. And be lost because of his, underline it, great stupidity. Now, in Proverbs chapter 5, scholars think that you got a couple of possibilities here. One is that maybe you have Solomon, and Solomon is writing from his wisdom. By the way, he probably garnered a little bit of wisdom on the subject when he got 1,000 ladies walking around your castle. I'm just saying. Some others have said something like this. No, it's probably not Solomon, you know, reflecting on anything like that, but it's certainly maybe Solomon imparting the wisdom that his dad had imparted to him. And of course, by his dad, we're talking about David. Either way, there's a lot that we need to pay attention to here, and here is the first thing that we need to pay attention to. And I want to start on the positive side, because since the topic today is lust, one of the things I want to dispel of right off the bat is the idea that all lust is bad. That is simply not true. And by the way, you already saw this in Proverbs chapter 5, didn't you? You already saw it. If you looked at verse 18, it says, let your fountain be blessed and take pleasure in the wife of your youth. Take pleasure in the wife of your youth. Now, when I was reading that, I'm sitting there going, all right, so let's suppose for a second this is Solomon. Here's what we could do. Click here and go, yeah, you didn't. You didn't take pleasure in the wife of your youth. You were pursuing all kinds of women. So you're, you know, it's kind of falling on, I don't hear you. You have no credibility. Now, we could react that way. Here's another way that we could react. We could react and say, you know what? Who better to speak to the situation than the person that was probably hurt and harmed and destroyed by it? That's the other way of looking at it. He says, let your fountain be blessed and take pleasure in the wife of your youth. What is he saying? Take pleasure in the wife of your youth. God created this. God created sex. God gets a bad rap sometimes. You know, some people will read some of the commands in the Old Testament. You know, it seems like that, you know, every time there's something fun, God looks at it and says that it's sin. I don't know, because when you look back into Genesis, one of the first commands that he says is to be fruitful and multiply. He's the one that brings the man and the woman together to begin with. I see a difference. I don't see God being miserly or trying to withhold blessing. I think what he's trying to do by his instruction is to keep things in its right place. And say there's a good way for this and a bad way for this. I want you to think, for example, on Exodus 21, 10, and 11, when it speaks of relationships. You know, especially when we're talking about marriage, you have covenant obligations in your marriage. And three of those that are mentioned are the provision of food, clothing, and marital rights. Marital rights is a little bit of a Hebrew word that people debate a little bit, but here's the big idea. That includes that there would be a sexual union between a husband and a wife. One man, one woman. That is the plan. That goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 2. So here's the thing. Imagine that you have one man, you have one woman, and then you have sexual desire in that relationship. Is that a bad thing? The answer is no, it isn't. You already saw this in Proverbs 5:18. What is the word that we use for that desire between a husband and a wife? And the answer is, it's lust. It's lust. The difference there is a good lust versus a bad lust. Even if you looked at verses 15 through 17, drink water from your own cistern, flowing from your own well. That is talking about the sexual union between a husband and a wife. And this is a good thing. Lust is literally, if you look at the word, it is a strong craving. That's what it means. As a matter, if we were to look at a marriage and say, there is no strong craving in a marriage, usually we look at the marriage and say, something's not right with that marriage. But what you do see when you have a healthy marriage is there's usually a strong craving for each other. And I'm talking about on a number of levels, not just a sexual level. But it includes a sexual level. So here's what God is saying. God is saying, satisfy your sexual desires with your spouse. That's what he's saying. And even if you look at Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, you could look at verses 2 and you could look at verses 5. And what does Paul say? Keep the marriage bed active. Keep it active. Why is that? He says, because if you don't, then you are giving Satan every opportunity that he needs to creep in and to destroy you. He creeps in and he destroys. Keep the marriage bed active. Now, why start here? I start here basically to say a lot of times when we talk about lust, we don't include the whole conversation. We look at the negative part and we don't look at the part that God has blessed and has said, by the way, will be a blessing to you. But here's why lust can go wrong. Lust can go wrong because this is the idea. It's a good desire gone wrong. It's a good desire gone bad. So when you are lusting after a person wrongly, so don't be thinking of your spouse right now. When you are lusting after a person wrongly, this is basically what you're saying. You're saying you want pleasure without the person. I want pleasure without the person. Here's another way of saying it. What that means is that you want to use them for your own gain, but you have no interest in anything else with them. That's lust gone wrong. I want pleasure without the person. I want your body. I just don't want you. I certainly don't want to do it under the parameters that God created it for. I want you for what benefits me. And by the way, I'm never actually going to give you me. I'm never going to give you that. By the way, Paul gives us this warning in Ephesians 2:3. He says, we are controlled by deceitful lusts or desires. We're controlled by them. We're controlled by them. And even in verse 16 in Proverbs 5, it says, should your springs overflow in the street, streams in the public square? And of course, the whole idea, it's like asking a question. It's like to ask it is to answer it. The answer is no, absolutely not. So when we look at Proverbs 5, what we need to see is the effects of out-of-control lust. Because here's the thing, sexual sin, it complicates everything. Sexual sin complicates everything. Everything. If you look at the studies, I started with studies on pornography, and here is why. When you have the studies, what they show is for a person that gets to the place where they're hooked on pornography, they're usually no longer satisfied with their wife. Their wife just does not do it for them anymore. And by the way, pornography is completely unrealistic as well, right? There's nobody in those scenes that's trying to raise four children together. Nobody. Nobody in those scenes has already worked all day and come home exhausted. Nobody in those scenes, by the way, is trying to deal with, you know, you're not agreeing on some things, and so you're arguing with each other. Welcome to marriage. That's just part of life, right? None of that stuff is, here's what's portrayed. It is portrayed as easy and immediate. That's how it's portrayed. And friends, that ain't life. That just is not life. Sexual sin complicates everything, and here's why. It causes bitterness. It depletes people financially because of cover-ups. For the marriages that break up, alimony, lawsuits, blown reputations, not to mention the emotional toll it takes on the family itself. Just the emotional toll that it takes. And that includes marriage, that also includes children. By definition, when a person is pursuing someone other than who God gave them in marriage, have I repeated that enough yet today? Who God has given them in marriage, whether you're pursuing them emotionally or whether you're pursuing them physically, whatever the case may be, by definition, it is creating a separation in that marriage, period. By definition, you're pursuing someone, you are creating a separation in your marriage. And here's the result. Verse 11 in chapter 5, at the end of life, you will groan. You will groan. You will labor under the pain of the decision you have made. Look at it like this. You can choose any path that you want in life, you just can't choose your consequences. You can choose any path you want, you just don't choose the consequences. And so when you think of a person that says, I'm actually going to pursue another woman or another man, or I'm going to pursue pornography rather than my wife, guess what you've done? You have split the relationship that God has given to you. You have brought in distrust and harm. You've broken the fabric and the foundation of the union. But here's the idea. That's just something private, right? Don't buy it. At the end of your life, you will groan. J.D. Greer gave a really good example about this several years ago. I remember him talking about this, and he said, here's the thing. Maybe you need to see your sex life like duct tape. By the way, weird start, right? But hang in there, all right? Maybe... You need to see your sex life like duct tape. Here's the idea. Suppose that you take some duct tape and you put it around an arm. And let's imagine for a second it's like a really hairy arm, right? You put duct tape around the arm, then you rip the duct tape off, right? Now, here's the thing. Then you take the same piece of duct tape and you put it on someone else's arm and you tear it off. By the way, you get the same effect. Now, do it 5 or 6 times. And you have a lot of different people that are on that piece of duct tape. A lot of different people are on that piece of duct tape. But here's what's worse, and this is the real tragedy, is that the tape itself loses its integrity. It gets to the point where it can't even stick anymore. And that's the real tragedy about what we're talking about here. The real tragedy is we have so taken something that was given as a gift of God to be a blessing to us, and we have so taken it to a place that it was never meant to be, that guess what? It doesn't even allow us to connect to people the way that God designed it to connect us to somebody uniquely and specially. It rips the soul out of us. And this is why Paul says that sexual sin is a sin against yourself. It's against your own body. Why is that? Because you're destroying your soul. There's nothing left on the duct tape anymore. You're destroying your own soul. And moreover, it keeps you from connecting to your spouse the way that you were meant to connect your spouse through sex. I want to say something to the youth for just a second. If you love your spouse, I want to encourage you to love your spouse enough today to be pure for them. Love them today. Even if you don't have a clue who they, and by the way, most of you don't have a clue who they are. You don't have a clue who they are. Love them enough. Every decision that you make a decision that you have them in mind, even now. This is the better part of self-control. It's the way that you think through the situation. Remember, sexual sin is a sin against yourself. And what I would hate for anyone that is a student in this church, or a student anywhere, or any of you, how about that, all of you, what I hate is that you lose your stickiness. You lose your ability to connect to somebody that God wanted you to connect to in a way that you could have never imagined. I just want to say, when I was growing up in Mineola, Texas, I didn't know that Wendy Cavender was alive. I didn't know where she lived. I didn't know anything about her. Not a thing. Not a thing. So how should I handle myself? How should I handle myself now that I'm married to her? You get the idea. So how do I overcome lust? It's every man's battle. It's every person's battle. How do you overcome it? I just want to say a couple of things. One of the things I love about this passage is just honest, right? It is honest. And he blames nobody but himself for the failures. Nobody but himself. If you look at verse 12, I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof. I hated it. Verse 13, I didn't listen to the voice of my teachers. How do you overcome lust? Here's the first thing I want to suggest. Not like that. Not like that. The way that you overcome lust is being honest about your struggle and building accountability into your life. That's how you do it. So instead of saying, I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof, it's that I struggled with discipline, but I appreciated the reproof. That's how. Instead of saying, I didn't listen to the voice of my teachers, it was, this was difficult for me, but I actually listened to the voice of my teachers. Build accountability into your life. That's a good starting point. Second, delight in Jesus. Delight in Jesus. I mean, what we think is that the object of our lust is what's going to ultimately satisfy us, when in fact everything has shown that it's the opposite. The way that Proverbs 5 talks about that, you pursue this lady. There are two different ladies that are mentioned there. There's like this lady wisdom that pervades the wisdom literature. And then there's lady folly or lady lust. And it says, and you pursued her. And by the way, everyone that goes into her home, they're dead. They're dead. That's the part that we don't really jump on too much. We have to find another way. We have to find another place to be satisfied. Delight in Jesus. It's one of the themes here at our church. Delight in him. Remember, Solomon is remembering what David had said to him. You got the two women, Lady Wisdom, Lady Lust. But here's the thing to remember. God's remedy for our desire for sex, here's the thing, write it down, is for us to have sex. Did you hear that? The remedy, God's remedy for our desire for sex is for us to have sex. Now put this, when we're married. Please put that down. Don't go misquote me. I'll hunt you down like a wild animal. All right? Don't misquote me. That's the remedy. That's the remedy. Delight in him. Delight in him. And he's already said, one of the ways that you delight in me is by honoring this in the way that I created it. That's delighting in me. That's second. Here's third. And this is a word of caution. You saw it in Proverbs 5:8. When you face a season of temptation, because you will, you will. By the way, a lot of times you don't have to go looking for it. It will find you. It will find you. Chapter 5, verse 8 says this, don't go near her house. Don't go near her house. Here's the idea. I can never fail if I'm not in a place to fail. I can never fail if I'm not in a place to fail. This is why people, I am not going to be alone with a woman. I'm not. I am not going to emotionally invest in a woman that isn't my wife. I'm just not. That is asking for it. I'm just not going to do it. If you are not in a place to fail, you cannot fail. Set yourself up for success. And that means literally, physically, where you put yourself. Why do you think it is a lot of families have computers in a public space in their home? and they don't allow them in the bedroom. That's why. It's because sin thrives in isolation. That's why. And so you build measures in. Don't go near her house. By the way, if her house is the computer, don't go near it. If her house is literally a house, hey, don't go near it. You get the idea. Don't. In Romans 12:2, instead, Paul says this, present your body as a living sacrifice, which is a pleasing act of worship to God. Present your body. Present your body. Every time you stand up to temptation, you are presenting your body as a living sacrifice to Jesus. Every time. And the way that Romans 12:2 describes it is, and this is an acceptable and pleasing act of worship to Jesus. It's an acceptable and pleasing act of worship to Jesus. So you weaken the power. You weaken the power of the body over you. How do you do it? You beat it and bring it under submission, Paul says in Romans 6:1. Says it again in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. You whip it into submission. Learn to say no to the impulses of your body in every way. For some of you sitting there, you're going, yeah, sex isn't my problem. Alcohol might be, opioid use might be. It's the same kind of thing with a different application. You beat it into submission. Never do something simply because it's what you want, because usually our wants are wrong. They're wrong. We're controlled by deceitful lusts and desires, Paul said. Well, I want this. Maybe I think about your wants a little bit. Always let the will of God have the last say. Let me end with this idea. You remember Samson? Samson is a guy that never missed leg day at the gym, y'all. He was ripped, right? Everything's Samson, and this is your homework. I want you to read about him this week. Everything Samson does is driven by some sort of lust. Everything this guy does is driven by some sort of lust. He wants sex. Literally, he goes to a prostitute. He wants food. He eats honey that's forbidden to eat. He gets angry, so he picks up a jawbone, and he kills 1,000 people. By the way, that's mad. He kills 1,000 people. He's not following anything but his gut, and he never had enough self-awareness to say, maybe my gut's not worth following here. What was he? Samson was impulsive. He was impulsive. And by the way, impulsivity is a cancer that, left unchecked, will wreck your life. It will do it. Here's the other thing we see out of Samson. He's a compromiser. He is. I mean, it's interesting to see how careless Samson is with his vows to God. Long before Delilah cuts his hair, you remember the story? She cuts his hair, removes his power. Long before Delilah cut his hair, Samson had broken his vow at least a dozen other ways. At least. And here's the thing. I've wondered about this with Samson. But here's something that I've come to a conclusion of about the guy. I think what he said was, can this really hurt me? And then he makes a compromise, and he doesn't see the immediate effect of the compromise. And so he pushes for more. I think this is kind of the way that we work. When he's able to break one command without experiencing God's anger or wrath, or maybe not even the full consequences of it, he probably thought something like this. This has never been a problem in the past, and so I can probably keep getting away with this. Until finally, by the way, God's presence left him. Until God's presence left him. I want you to hear something from me this morning. Please hear what I'm trying to tell you. We talk about the difficult things because we live in a difficult and broken world. That's why we talk about it. I want God's voice to be heard. This morning, maybe there is something related to what we were talking about here that is affecting you personally. Please get help. Remember, the first thing that I said was that you build accountability into your life, somebody that will love you, bless you, challenge you, and be there for you. Get the help that you need. Last week, we talked about pride. Pride is telling you right now you don't need help. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Sin thrives in isolation, so don't allow yourself the opportunity to isolate yourself. For some of you in your marriages, you need to reclaim something that has been lost because your eyes, at best, have been wandering. It's time to have eyes that are focused on the blessing that God gave you in your marriage and to recover what's there. Here's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you I'm here to help you. I'm telling you our staff, we're here to help you. I'm telling you our Stephen ministers, we're here to help you. Please hear what I'm saying. Don't play with this, because at the end of the day, when you play with it, you're acting like Samson. Maybe I've gotten away with it once. Maybe. Until the blessing of God leaves you and you see the full brokenness of the decisions that you've made. And God is saying it doesn't have to be that way. See, the rest of the story, friends, is this. And this is a beautiful thing about Scripture. You know why it's so honest about this stuff? It's because it's honest about me and you. These people, no different from me. How about you? No different. No different. I always say this. And I had a friend that had to leave ministry last year because of a moral failure in his life. He and I were talking about this. And one of the things that I thought when I hung up the phone was, if it hadn't been for the grace of God, every day, I don't know I'd be any different. So God protect me. God protect my family. We don't just need to have desires. We need to have rightly ordered desires. And we need to remember and take a different view of the commands of God and see them instead of trying to keep us from a blessing, instead to fully understand the blessing. So we want to end our time. The way we want to end it is we just want to sing, God is good. God is good. And after we sing, I just want to say this. I'm here. I'm here. Our staff, we're here. Our Stephen ministers, we are here. And instead of saying, you know, I'll delay, don't delay. Once we sing, once we dismiss, please come down. We would be thrilled to pray with you, to walk with you, to guide you, and to help you. Father, I thank you for your word. Because it's real. For whatever might be inside of us that just keeps us from not wanting to hear what you've said today, could you just put that to the side by the work of your Spirit? I think what we know this morning, there isn't, you don't desire harm for us, you desire good and our blessing. I pray we wouldn't be the character in Proverbs 5 that says, I despised instruction. But God, I pray today we would hear you. We would admit where sin has a hold on us, where lust has a control on us. Instead of pretending and maybe even trying to make things look pretty, I pray, God, we would be honest. We would see the hurt that has caused ourselves and those around us. And I pray, God, by taking hold of your grace and your forgiveness, we can see the rest of the story. Where you take something that's broken and you put it back together. Where you take something that's ugly and you make it beautiful. We know that's the story of your gospel. We know your gospel is our hope. We thank you, Lord Jesus, for in spite of the fact that what we talked about today is every person sitting in here in some way, on the cross you said, we're worth it. You took our sin on yourself. You took our shame on yourself. And in doing so, you desire not that we have the stain of a guilty conscience, but that we be forgiven. So we give all this over to you, Lord, that you do the work, and ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.